Good morning, everybody. How is it going? How's it going with your red letter challenge? So we started on Tuesday, and now would be, I guess, our second week. And I hope that you're tracking with us. If you haven't, you know what? There's still time to be able to get one of these books, and I want to encourage you to do that. This is the week of being. We're going to be getting a little bit more intense in this week with the red letter challenge. I think it's going to be really, really good. When I think of being, I think of a story of a guy named John Stephen Akwari. It's a lot to say that. John Stephen Akwari. He was from Tanzania. He was a marathon runner. In fact, he'd won many marathons in Africa itself. And in 1968, yes, it's 1968, going back a few years, he went to the Summer Olympics. The Summer Olympics of that year was in Mexico City. And if you know anything about Mexico City, it has incredibly high altitude. It's a city on a hill. And John had never run a marathon in a place that had such high altitude. He wasn't used to it. And so even though he was an incredibly good runner, he started off really, really well. And at about the 19-kilometer mark, close to the middle part of his marathon, the altitude really, really started hitting him. And he wasn't doing so well in the middle part of the marathon. He actually ended up getting into a bit of an accident with some other runners. He tripped and he fell. He ended up injuring his knee. In fact, he ended up dislocating his knee as well as hurting his shoulder in the middle of the run. And they had to bandage him up, put on some help onto his knee, and they were giving him the advice, you know, I think that you need to sit this one out, because he was only halfway through. He had over 20 kilometers left to be able to run with a dislocated knee, so you just need to sit down. But John would have nothing to do with that. He wanted to finish the race, and so he kept on running. In fact, everybody else had finished the race. It started with 75 people running the marathon, and only 57 actually ended up finishing it. Well, John was last. He was dead last. In fact, he was so last that, the stadium was emptying out, and they were doing their medal ceremony at the end. And as this was happening, they realized that there was still one other runner out on the street running. And so they sent their cameras out to find this runner, which was John. And they finally found him, and they tracked him all the way into the stadium. And when he finally entered in the stadium, quite long after everybody else had finished, the last few thousand people that were in the stadium cheered him on as he hobbled to the finish line. Afterwards, they interviewed him and they asked him, why is it that you would just continue the run? Why didn't you sit out when so many others would sit out? And this was his response. He says, my country did not send me 5,000 miles to start the race. They sent me 5,000 miles to finish the race. He wasn't going to be deterred. He knew why he was there, and he knew that even though he was going to be dead last, and he knew that everybody else was going to finish before him, he wasn't going to get a medal. He wasn't going to travel halfway around the world to quit halfway through, no matter what he wanted to finish. This type of story, I think it sticks out to us today, partially because it's a little bit abnormal. I think for us, in just being human beings, we tend to want to quit when things are obviously that we're not going to win. I don't know if you've been in the middle of a board game. Maybe it's a long board game like Risk, and it's very, very obvious that you are going to lose, and the board game could continue on for another hour, maybe. And it's very, very obvious that someone else is going to win and you have no chance of winning. And everything within you just wants to give up. You just want to throw in the towel. There's no point in playing. Well, can you imagine? This is what the situation was for this marathon runner. Actually, statistics show in a book called Finish by John Acuff, it shows that 92% of people don't finish their goals or their resolutions. 92%. That is incredibly high. And so if you're that person who's just wanting to quit in the middle of something that is very obvious is going to end poorly, you're in good company. We tend to want to do that. But I want to encourage you today on two different levels. If you started the Red Letter Challenge, maybe you stumbled out of the gate doing it. Or maybe, you know, halfway through, you know, it's going to be hard to just keep track every single day. What's most important is how you finish than when you start. But I think what's more appropriate to this story of this marathon runner actually has to do with your relationship with God and your journey with Jesus. Is that for many people, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. This journey of faith is a marathon. And you might have started off really, really well at some point in time, and now you're in the middle of your journey, and you're stumbling, and you're injured. And the easiest thing to do is to give up, is to throw in the towel. And maybe that's you. You really feel that today. And maybe you feel it even stronger in the middle of what we're experiencing with the shutdown, the coronavirus, and everything that entails that. You're not even allowed to come into a church building. And it's like you just want to throw in the towel. And I would encourage you that it's more important how you finish than how you start. To not give up, but to press through. And I believe that Jesus encourages us in that as well. When it comes to your relationship with God, this is so important. You know, you can start on your own strength. And I think in many ways we start on our own strength and we can live out our relationship with God in our own strength. But you can't finish on your own strength. You may be able to start on your own strength, but you can't finish on your own strength. We need Jesus to strengthen us in this journey. We can't do it on our own. We really, really need his help. We need to continue to come to him with our burdens. We need to continue to come to him and look for strength. Isaiah chapter 40 is a very common passage that we look to, but I think it's really, really pertinent. It's Isaiah 40, it starts in verse 28. I'm going to read from the English Standard Version. It says this, it says, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable." I just want to pause right there. Have you not known? Have you not heard? Maybe you're someone today who's been doing this journey with Jesus, and I think at times in our walk with Jesus, we forget. We forget about who God is. We forget about this everlasting God that this is talking about. We forget about the creator of the ends of the earth. We forget the fact that he does not grow weary. We may grow weary, but he does not. We forget about him. Maybe you're someone who you wouldn't consider yourself to be a Christian, or you wouldn't consider yourself to be a follower of Jesus in that way. And I would say this is for you as well. Have you not seen? Have you not heard? Have you not known of this God? In verse 29, it continues. It says, "He gives power to the faint. And to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary. And young men shall fall exhausted." Just want to pause there again. I mean, it points to youth, saying that some of us, and maybe it's the young or maybe it's something else that you're strong at, sometimes we rely upon our own strength. Youth are the most to rely upon their strength because they don't grow weary like those who are old. They have more energy than the rest of us. And the psalmist is telling us, no matter how strong you think you are, you will grow weary. You will be able to faint because even youth faint and be weary. And young men shall fall exhausted. No matter how strong you are, you will be exhausted as well. And this is the answer in verse 31. It says, "But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. The answer isn't being stronger. The answer isn't digging down deeper within yourself, within your own strength, within your own know-how. Actually, the answer is they who wait on the Lord. That is the answer. Are you waiting on the Lord? It says if we wait for God, that he's the one who's going to renew our strength. I love that picture of mounting up on wings like eagles, the strength of eagle's wings, being able to soar over everything. And that is what the strength of Jesus gives us, that even the middle of a marathon, that we can run and we won't be weary. For each of the next 5 weeks, we're going to be touching on a different theme every week. So we're hitting on being. We're going to be talking about forgiving. We're going to be talking about serving and giving and going. This week, we're focusing on that aspect of being. And to be honest with you, I think this aspect of being is probably the most important one of the entire 5 weeks. And I think that that's why it's at the beginning. Everything else hinges on being. Everything else hinges on who you are. The reality is, as Zach Zender says in his book, is that our doing flows from our being. If our doing starts first, we get everything mixed up and we end up doing things in our own strength and it doesn't go so well. But our doing needs to flow from our being. The question is, what does it mean to be? How do I be? What is God expecting of me in this aspect of being? Well, I think of another Olympic sport, the Olympic sport of rowing. I don't know about you, but I don't typically turn on the TV and find a lot of, rowing competitions, except during the Olympics. And then we watch it. And rowing is similar to a lot of other Olympic events. There's a start and there's a finish. And the point of rowing is just to get to the finish line. That's the point of rowing, just get to the finish line, no matter how long it is, and there's different lengths of boats, and there's different amount of people that are rowing. But what makes rowing different from a lot of other races is that most races are all about seeing the finish line with your eyes, shooting towards the finish line, and getting there as quick as you can. But with rowing, it's different. I don't know if you've noticed, but rowers always have their back to the finish line. They don't see the finish line. So the question is, how do they get there? How do they make sure they cross the finish line when they can't see? Where the key to rowing is there's a man or there's a woman at the front of the boat. Their name is the cox. And they're actually they're the only one in the boat that's actually facing the finish line. Everybody else's back is to it. And the cox is the most important person in the boat. In fact, those who know a lot about rowing, when a team crosses the finish line and they get first or they get gold, it's oftentimes the cox that receives a lot of the praise. Because it's the cox who actually is the tactician for the group. They are the director for the group. Everybody who's rowing, their eyes are actually set on the cox. And the one thing they're listening to, there's a lot going on. There may be people on the sidelines cheering them on. They may be hearing their teammates behind them, in front of them. The one thing they're focusing on, the one thing they're listening to is the cox who's at the front of the boat. And it's the cox who's at the front of the boat who sees the finish line and has their hands on the rudder. They're the one who is steering the boat. And they're the ones who's speaking to the rowers and telling them exactly what they need to do. It's the cox who's encouraging them, telling them, okay, guys, you need to put a little bit more into it. You need to push with your legs just a little bit more. Okay, guys, we're halfway there. Okay, guys, we're about three quarters of the way there. And he's coaching them and he's talking to them and he's telling them what to do the entire time. That is the goal of the cox. And when I hear that story and when I hear of how that works in rowing, I think it really relates to the Christian life. In reality, the race that we're in is that we don't see the finish line. We don't. We don't know what's up ahead. We don't know when it's coming. We may be working hard, but the reality is that we're completely reliant upon our cox, if you want to say it that way, the one in the boat who's directing us, and that's Jesus. There's a lot of stuff going on around us, but our success is completely reliant upon relying on listening and seeing Jesus. We don't see the finish line. All we do is see Jesus. And he's the tactician. He sees the finish line for us. And he's the one who's coaching us. He's the one that's encouraging us. He's the one who's spurring us on. And he's the one who's actually directing the boat. Can you imagine if the rowers were the ones that are trying to steer the boat? All right, guys, hit your right oar now. Okay, hit your left oar now. It would be an absolute mess. But when the right person is in charge of the rudder, the boat goes straight and it goes where it needs to be. The writer of Hebrews spoke with Olympic-style language as well, which kind of fits into this theme. In Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1, he says, "Let us run with endurance the race God has set before us." So how do we run with endurance? Well, it says we do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus. Isn't that interesting? We run this race with endurance. How? By keeping our eyes on Jesus. It sounds counterintuitive almost. It continues, "This is the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he's seated in the place of honor beside God's throne." So we keep our eyes set on Jesus. He's the one who initiates our faith. He's the one who starts it right from the beginning. And he's the one who's going to perfect it. So you may be in the middle of your race and you're stumbling and you're falling, like I was referring earlier to that marathon runner. But you keep your eyes on Jesus, and he's the one who's going to perfect it. He's the one who's actually going to pick you up. He's the one who's not going to give up on you. And you are going through, part of the aspect of perfecting our faith is actually dealing with the stumbling and the falling that we deal with. He perfects our faith through that. We typically focus on the finish line, but what we need to do is we need to focus on Jesus. And the reality is that we are not the strong ones. We are not the champions, but he is the strong one and he is the champion. And we completely rely upon him. And he's the one who's going to give us the strength to row and to get through. Through this week of being, there's going to be about five different things. Actually, it's probably closer to seven, but I've grouped them into five that we're going to be focusing on this week in terms of this aspect of being. One is, and you maybe even read it today on day seven, it's this aspect of abiding in the Word of God, abiding in the words of Jesus, dwelling on it and meditating it. And I would encourage you to open up your Bible and specifically find the words of Jesus and find those words that God wants to speak into your heart and meditate on it. That is part of being, is that as we abide in his Word, it transforms our hearts and our lives. The second part is prayer, this aspect of communicating with God. And it's a two-way thing. It's us speaking to our, it's him speaking to our hearts and us communicating to him. The third one is worship and celebration. This aspect of being is spending time in worship and celebration. That's why we do music here. This is an aspect. It's of using musical giftings to worship, to focus our eyes upon Jesus, and be children of God in his presence. It's going to be talking on solitude and rest and Sabbath, that aspect of setting aside the things of the week. You've worked all week long and just being in his presence, resting with him, just you and him. And then we're even going to be touching on this aspect of fasting, putting aside certain things in our lives, whether it's food or other activities, and saying, I'm going to push those aside so I can focus on Jesus. When it comes to being, I don't know if you have noticed, but we tend to be like the people who we spend time with. Who do you hang out with? Who are your friends? Right now, it's probably a very small group of people, a very small bubble, your family. And we tend to become like those who we are with. So if we want to be like Jesus, we need to be spending time with Jesus. There's a story in the book of Luke that Luke tells of the city that Jesus came to. It was the city of Jericho, and Jesus was traveling through different cities and different towns, and when he came to Jericho, all the crowds came to meet him. And this is how Luke describes it. It says, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector in the region, and he had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but he was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. When Jesus came by, he looked up at Zacchaeus and called him by name. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. He's gone to be the guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I will give half my wealth to the poor, Lord. And if I've cheated people on their taxes, I will give them back four times as much. Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today, for this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. This is a story of relationship. It's a story of transformation. Zacchaeus was a tax collector. 2,000 years ago in this setting, the tax collector was probably the most hated person in every single town. And he lived in the city of Jericho, and he might well have been the richest person in the town, but he was also the most hated. And the reason why he was hated was because he was seen as a traitor to his own people. They had been conquered by the kingdom of Rome, and Rome had hired guys like Zacchaeus to pick up taxes from his own people. And the tax load was incredibly heavy for the people of Israel during this time, but the way that the tax collector would make even more money was he would ask for more taxes than what was needed. And he got rich off of the backs of his fellow Israelites. So yeah, they hated him. Jesus walks into this scene, and Jesus could have picked anybody else in the crowd. He really could have. I don't know about you. We see it all the time. When a famous person comes into town, who do they hang out with? They hang out with other famous people. They hang out with those who have money, those who have prestige, those who have influence. Jesus could have hung out with anybody, and yet he came through that town. And you know what? He knew exactly where Zacchaeus was. There was tons of people. The crowds were surrounding him. But he knew exactly where Zacchaeus was. Even though Zacchaeus, the short little guy, was hiding up in a tree, he picked out Zacchaeus. And he said, Zacchaeus, I've come here for you. I've come here to spend time with you. And you know what? Jesus' intention was just to be with him. Did Jesus know of all of Zacchaeus' sins and the things that he'd done? And did he know all the dirt? I think he did. He recognized who Zacchaeus was. No one told Jesus about Zacchaeus before he showed up. But Jesus just knew. And yet he picked him anyways. He picked to hang out with him, and he didn't bring up all of his past. He's like, Zacchaeus, come, I want to hang out with you because I need to straighten you out. I need to tell you all the things that you're doing wrong. He didn't do that. You know, sometimes I think when we think of God, when we think of Christianity, or maybe even Jesus, if you're on the outside looking in and you're thinking about why would I ever, man, this is, if I come to God in that way, it's all about what I do wrong and it's all about me changing. And I would say to you today that if Jesus is coming to you, he's calling you. And his calling out to you isn't to pick out all the things that you've done wrong. It's not to pick out all that stuff, but he literally just wants to be with you. He wants to have relationship with you in every single way, the good, the bad, and the ugly. This is a perfect example of what Jesus is all about. And you know what? Zacchaeus' life, we see in the story that his life was transformed just by being with Jesus. We get the short version of this story, but it's very obvious that Jesus is going to Zacchaeus' house and everybody's talking about it. Everybody's gossiping about it. And there's just Jesus and Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus' life is transformed by being with him. I want to encourage you today that, like, I don't know where you're at today, but your life will be transformed by just being with Jesus. Just by being with him. It's not about trying to fix yourself. It's not about all that stuff. When you are with him, stuff happens. Your life is transformed. And I look at the life of Zacchaeus, and he was trying to fill that hole in so many ways. He had all the riches in the world. And I'm sure when he took that job, he knew he was going to get rich, and he thought that it would give him what he needed in life. And when he spent time with Jesus, it was almost like he realized it was nothing in comparison. It's nothing. And he says, Jesus, I'm going to give away half of what I have to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody, I'm going to give them four times as much. Was he doing that because he felt like he needed to do that to gain the favor of Jesus? I don't think so. I think he was doing it because he recognized that he didn't need that. He didn't need it anymore. What he needed was Jesus, and that filled up every single part of his life. And that's why this being is so important. It's about Jesus chasing after you. You know, in this story, Jesus' word says, I must be a guest at your house today. Use the word must. And he's knocking at the door of your life and he's saying, man, I need to be with you. I want to be with you. Will you let me in? Will you let me in? We're going to spend some time in worship. I'm going to be handing it off to Kim. And I want to encourage you to, I don't care where you're at. You might be on the couch at home or in bed or whatever, but I want you to soak in these songs. And I want you to be with Jesus. He is there with you right now. This isn't about what label you place yourself, put on yourself. This isn't about what has been going on in your life, no matter how much you stumbled in your life. This is just about being with him. Let him.